This is Danny Dave and Moore.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle Sports app.
It is Danny Dave and Moore, fresh off the practice field, the man of the hour. Jazz Ferguson's with us. What's going on, man?
Not much. Just had a good practice.
Well, you had a pretty good game Thursday, too, and this is our first chance to talk to you since then. How did that feel out there?
I mean, preparation. I was ready to get out there and play. I mean, for one thing, to see Central League Field for what it was. I mean, the stadium wasn't packed, but, I mean, I was all wide-eyed at pregame. Got to see the fans screaming and shouting. But once the game started, you know, I was ready to go.
What was that like walking into the locker room and seeing your game jersey and helmet? I mean, you're a rookie guy coming in. It had to have been pretty exciting.
Right. I mean, it was pretty, you know, like heartwarming. I was ready to get there and play, but to see all the setup and see the Seahawks, you know, emblem on there, the NFL emblem. I knew I was about to play, like, my first NFL football game.
Yeah. Well, and you're a gamer, man. They threw you four passes. You caught all of them. And also followed up with a good practice today, too. How important is practice?
I mean, practice is everything, especially here. You know, you want to show what you can accomplish at practice against our guys, you know, tougher coverages, tougher looks, and it just sets you up for the game. You have a great week of practice, the game feels much easier.
You know, I'm excited to talk to you because I thought if I ever get a chance to talk to Jazz Ferguson, there's one question that's, like, foremost on my mind that I want to ask you. You got any idea what that might be?
Is it about my name,
Jazz? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, because I don't know anybody named Jazz.
I mean, my full name is Jazz Mund, J-A-Z-M-O-N-D. But my mom, you know, she just always called me Jazz, and every coach, every teacher I ever met, I always cut it off, and it's been Jazz. She also is a big basketball fan, so Utah Jazz, that's the thing.
Is she?
Yeah.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, yeah, I just think it's cool. I think it's a cool name because, I mean, you don't hear it. I mean, do you know any other Jazzes?
No one.
Yeah.
There can be only one.
Yeah, that's right.
There's only one Jazz.
Well, he's making the name known as well. We're talking to Jazz Ferguson. You had a unique path here, and 2 years at LSU, 2 years at Northwestern.
Right.
What was that path that you've taken? What have you learned along the way?
That path, the separation of that path, just gave me maturity, humbleness, and just the ability to grow up in general. It taught me how to be a man and not just a boy just going through college. What? Ending high school, going through college, and making it to the pros. It was a step in there that I had to grow up and be like a guy that would take responsibility for everything.
When did that happen? Was it after you left LSU?
After I left LSU, right before I got to NSU. Because there was a point in time where I thought I wasn't going to be able to play football again. I thought I was going to just, you know, be at home, just not in school anymore.
What were you doing then?
I ended up working at a catering company back home to pay for my first semester at Northwestern State.
Oh, no kidding. Right. So is that like December that you go back there? Or when did you leave LSU?
I left LSU it was right at the end of the season. So maybe November, December, something like that.
And then you started at Northwestern State.
That winter semester.
So you did full year transition.
Right.
Then. What did you learn in that time working? Did you kind of get a glimpse of what life without football
would
be like?
I mean, I did, and I didn't like it at all. That's why I immediately started working so I could pay for my semester because I knew I couldn't get on scholarship at the next school, whatever school that may be. That's before I knew it was going to be Northwestern State, so I went ahead and started working. And, yeah, I just couldn't do it without football.
Yeah, don't ever lose that thought because it's no good on the outside, Jazz. Life after football, yeah, it's no fun.
Well, it's great. You get to sit here with the two of us.
Regular job like this, you know.
He's hurting my feelings now, Jazz.
He sounds like he don't enjoy it.
Yeah, it does. It does, doesn't he? Yeah,
football, no, it's just football so much fun, man.
Right.
I mean,
lot,
you get, and now you get paid to be a player. So,
right.
Hey, you and Paxton Lynch, I thought, were the stars of that game. Paxton really stepped up. Did he throw you a pass today?
Yeah.
Or was that Russ that threw that one?
Last pass was Paxton.
Yeah. That's, I mean, he looks pretty good, too. And I think kind of a similar story, you know, like you both, he went a different way. I mean, he was the first rounder.
Right.
You undrafted free agent. But both of you guys kind of trying to fight your way in. And it's pretty cool. You have a connection with him at all?
Yeah, I do. We got an outfield connection, too. We're pretty good, you know, friends. I can say that. We went to San Diego for a little workout. We hung out a good little bit. I just really got to know him as well as the other guys there.
Yeah.
Just to find out a little more about the path that you took to get here with the Seahawks, what kind of kid were you when you were at LSU before you made the transition to who you are now?
What you mean?
What kind of kid? I mean, were you cocky? Were you?
Oh, no, I was never cocky. I mean, when I came out of high school, I had 4 stars on some website, 5 stars on other, but I never paid stars into mine. I knew where I came from. I was a humble child growing up my whole life, a child that was in church every Sunday with mom, grandma. So just, yeah, I was never that guy that just seen myself above anyone.
It was an interesting story that Adam Jude of the Seattle Times wrote about. Yeah, I know you had an interview with him last week, yeah. And he talked about Ashley Leggett Pugh.
Right.
And was she a trainer there at Northwestern State?
Yeah, trainer.
And what did you think when you found out, and you probably knew at the time, or maybe from reading the story or whatever?
Oh, she definitely told me that.
That you were her least favorite player on the team.
Yeah, that wasn't anything, like, new to me. I mean, I never knew I was her least favorite, but she told me. She always constantly told me and reminded me how far I've came from when I got there. Because once I got there, I was still kind of lagging behind doing the same stuff I was doing at LSU. I wasn't going to class and wasn't just getting in my books how I was supposed to be. And she noticed that. So, I mean, once I was able to get corrected and get the grades, you know, and keep going to class regular, she just told me about how far I had came and that I wasn't the same guy that walked in a year ago.
Well, and then pretty cool, I imagine, for you to learn that you became her favorite player on the team.
I did love her. Like, yeah, she was a good role model for me. She always kept me on my toes and just pointed me in the direction she wanted me to go in type thing. She wanted me to be this lead on the team. I knew I needed to be a lead on that team. And she just always, just, you know, kept me on the right path.
It's interesting, Jazz, as you talk about that, because I think one of the challenges for a lot of NFL rookies is that things have always clicked for them before.
Right.
Like, you get to this point. You get to the NFL by being remarkable. And for a lot of guys, they haven't maybe tasted the adversity that you've gone through in some ways of having a year without football.
True.
Do you think that might prepare you better for what you're going to face here in the pros?
I wouldn't say better. It just will be a quick eye-opener for those guys who haven't had to experience adversity before. I mean, every rookie I see up in our receiver room, I know Terry went through JUCO, DK broke his neck, Gary got hurt, injured his knee before. So, I mean, all those guys had seen some type of adversity as well as guys on the defense as well. So, I mean, I'm pretty sure they'll be ready for it.
Do you get a lot of phone calls after the game on Thursday night?
Oh, yeah, I did. A lot of phone calls, a lot of notifications. I just waited till the next day, you know, to answer everybody back.
Whose message meant the most to you?
My girl, she's pregnant. She's due on September 29th. My little boy.
Congratulations.
Named Jackson. Thank you.
What's his name?
Jackson.
Jackson. Oh, that's awesome, man. Are you excited? Nervous?
I'm very excited. I'm so happy to see her, but yeah, I am nervous. It's my first too.
Yeah.
What do you like doing off the field when you're not playing?
I play video games heavily. I play Fortnite a lot, I can honestly say. But also, yeah. I like to be – I play a lot of sports in high school and middle school, so I'm real active in that, so I wouldn't mind playing basketball. I'm not going to be more smarter with it now.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't mind playing basketball. Baseball, anything like that.
What other sports did you play in high school?
Basketball, baseball. I ran track.
And ran track.
What did you do in track?
Long jump, triple jump, and I ran the relays.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty fun.
Are you good at Fortnite?
I feel like I'm okay.
You see that kid, 16 years old?
Yeah, $3
million. Won $3
million
playing Fortnite.
Right.
So now when my kids are playing, I'm kind of going, well.
Coach them up.
Yeah.
Yeah, get them better.
Go ahead, keep playing.
Jim's going to be their agent.
Hold on. Are you serious?
Yeah, I don't care. If they came home and said, hey, Dad, I made $3 million playing Fortnite, I'd be okay.
Well, first thing. What would you say if your kids came home and said, Dad, I'm going to be an NFL player, and that's the thing I'm going to focus on most? You'd probably tell him that that's not very realistic, right? Unless you're built like Jazz or able to
I would tell him that, yes.
There are probably way more people playing Fortnite than there are that even have the ability to play in the NFL. I think it's a bad career path to be advising the kids on.
Well, I mean, my kids are pretty good athletes, but I think they have a better chance of winning $3 million at Fortnite than getting a career in the NFL.
I think this is really bad for society. $3 million reward for a kid sitting on his tail playing a video game.
Right.
That's not good. Just think about it. If it was your kids, right? I mean, you're getting ready to be a dad now.
Right.
Like, would you say, yeah, you got to keep playing those video games?
I mean, I wouldn't say I would demote him into not playing. I wouldn't encourage, like, okay, you be in the house all day, you playing a video game. Now, if he told me he just signed up for a tournament, you know, to win $3 million, I'm like, okay, well, look, get your practice in.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah, there you go.
Hey, what do you learn from your events? He led all of college football with 45 sacks last year and drafted in the third round.
Right.
Do you get some good advice from him?
Oh, yeah. The biggest thing I ever took away from my brother was toughness. He's been tough his whole life. He's played, I'm pretty sure, all the sports I played, football, basketball, baseball at the time. But he always was a guy that was like, had this defensive line mindset. Like, he got quick-tempered, but he never, like, just acted on it. He'd just get mad. So he always generated that frustration towards football. He taught me that. I mean, he has two kids now that stays with him in Baltimore. So he teaches me about that all the time, just gives me advice. And my child's not even here yet. I mean, he been through all those obstacles in college. Like, he had his combine invite script away from him, you know. So he had to deal with some type of adversity, as I did as well. So yeah, I was just encouraging me to keep my head up, and I just do the same for him.
Were you bummed out to not be drafted?
Bummed out?
Yeah, because I saw you ran a 4.45 at the combine. And
I mean, it never set me aside from anything. It never said, well, football's not about to work for me. It was just another step. I just knew I had to go that much further improving myself to play football again.
What made you choose Seattle? It's a long way from home.
Seattle's a team I always admired. It was Seattle, the Rams, who I made the call. It was Seattle, the Rams, and another team I forgot. But, I mean, just Seattle, knowing Coach Carroll's background and the guys that came here and played, you know, it felt like a team I wanted to be a part of, or at least, you know, put myself out there to be a part of.
That's looking like a great choice. Do you got anything else for Jazz?
Well, outside of the team, what do you think of the Northwest?
The north up here?
Yeah.
Oh, man, the temperature's way different at home. The air is clean. I get to walk outside and see a lake every day. It's just different. And I get to see the mountain once we, like, just driving, just to see a mountain in the background. That's my first time seeing a mountain.
You get turf, too. You see turf running around out there?
Yeah, I do. And the Eagles just constantly laying on the field. Yeah. Crazy.
Jazz, thanks so much, man.
Oh, no problem.
5 o'clock refresh brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, Washington's most refreshing beer. Jazz Ferguson was the story. He and Paxton Lynch were probably the two guys at the tip of everyone's tongue after Thursday night's game. We love young receivers. You love tantalizing yourself, and he's a big dude.
That's, I think people have an obsession with the big-bodied wide receiver. I mean, that is the answer to everything. Look at Jimmy Graham when they brought him in here, and tight end, albeit he campaigned to be a receiver and paid like a receiver. But yeah, it's those kinds of guys, I think, are fascinating to people. So anyway, there's two of them now. He's a little bit taller than DK Metcalf, right? I think he's 6'5", whereas Metcalf's 6'4". So those guys are big dudes. But, you know, he ran one of the catches he had because he was targeted four times. Four catches. One of the routes he ran was precise. You know, it had a couple of different little moves in it. And, you know, that's the thing, you know, in college where you just go out and play. Like, yeah, go get open. You know, run an in route. It's not like that in the NFL. You have to be really good in order to get open. And I don't care if you're going against second, third stringers still. I mean, that's the things that he showed, I think, were a lot like what Paxton Lynch showed, is that, you know, it doesn't really matter what you're doing it, who you're doing it against. It matters, you know, what you're doing. So, and I thought the things that he did, but he's got to do it again. I mean, Jazz Ferguson, do you guys remember him popping that much at practice?
Well, in the scrimmage, he was good, though.
A couple times, yeah. Yeah, yeah, exactly. In the scrimmage, I think he caught two or three passes. So, did he have a touchdown, too, I believe, in that?
I think he might add two in the scrimmage, but it was late in the scrimmage there at Pop Keeney. But, right. No, I just, you know, and I know I always mention this just because it was so baffling to me, and it was baffling to Richard Sherman, too, because remember, Sherman went to Twitter and said, how could Kaysom Williams not make this team, or words to that effect, anyway. So, I just don't know what to make of preseason. I mean, obviously, you know, it's better to do what Jazz Ferguson's doing than like Gary Jennings until today, where you really hadn't heard much from him. But we'll see how it all shakes out. And it's, you know, you get caught up in what happened in that first game with Jazz Ferguson and the scrimmage, and boy, maybe he'll be the guy that you're hoping DK Metcalf will be, and you haven't seen too much of that yet from him. And so, but nice to have these different options. But right now, if I had to bet on whether Jazz Ferguson is going to make this team or not, you probably would bet that he won't. Even though he's been so good so far.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with you just because of the competition at the position.
Let me ask you about quarterback. Same thing?
I think it's going to be Paxton Lynch.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's
just off of what he did the other night.
And how he looked in practice today.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's got
confidence
now, I
think.
Do it a couple more times.
And that's, you're right.
But based on what we've seen out of Geno Smith, I mean, he clearly won the job up until that first game.
Smith has the experience and the starting. Yeah. Yeah, he's been a starter in the NFL, too.
He's also bounced around, though. This is his fourth team, right? Because he's been with both New York franchises. Then he backed up Philip Rivers last year in San Diego.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like this is Paxton Lynch's second go-round. So it's possible that something just clicks for him. The idea of a change of scenery or some sort of setting that things... If I was a GM, I would constantly be taking the flyers on high-profile guys who, for whatever reason, it didn't work out. And both Jazz Ferguson and Paxton Lynch fit that description in this way. Paxton Lynch was a first-round pick, and it didn't happen for him in Denver. And things like all of the different things stacked up of whether it was his difficulty in understanding the offense, hard time adjusting to a different level of competition, or just the professionalism of preparation, didn't work out for him. You give him another opportunity. Jazz Ferguson was a top 100 recruit. When he came out, and when you see him, you totally understand why. A guy that fast that ran a sub 4.5 40 at the combine,
pretty impressive.
Who's that big, like absolutely every coach would sign him. And at LSU, and I think it was largely grade issues, he didn't end up getting on the field. He got kicked out of school. He didn't make it at LSU.
Did you say he ran a 4.45 at the combine?
Yes.
You know, that didn't really like ring a bell with me until, and I just, you know, realized that's a 6'5", 225-pound dude running that.
It's really fast, and yeah. He's really big. Are the odds, is it likely he's going to make the team? No, but I could see as a coach how tempting it would be as, man, yeah. If we can get this guy to the consistency, because you know the athleticism, like the ability, the raw goods are absolutely there.
Guys like that out there in the first half so you can see how they do against better yeah. defensive
Well,
backs.
Maybe they will. And I'll tell you what, that's another kind of story that Pete loves, right? The story of grit, of overcoming getting kicked out of LSU and having to go to Northwestern State and then sort of rebuild the whole thing. Yeah, I mean, I think that means something to him.
Have we seen many of those stories pan out here in Seattle? Mike Williams did his first year, right? That was a former top 10 pick who'd played for Pete in college and gotten pretty big, and he came here and got in shape and had a great first season. 2010, he was fantastic. 2011, it didn't quite sustain that way, and then he was gone after that.
Technically, I guess Michael Bennett. He was a free agent.
Yeah, Bennett was a free agent.
But they cut him, and that was Mora. And I remember that year making him MVP of the preseason games twice. And he had like 6 quarterback hits and a couple of sacks and everything, and they cut him. But he comes back as a free agent. I always forget about that with Michael Bennett. He's an undrafted free agent.
Yes, he was.
That's hard to believe. I mean, you know it's the case with Doug, but yeah, Doug worked out.
It's just a funny thing. I was thinking about him. I'm not sure why. Remember Chris Matthews in the Super Bowl?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He had never caught an
was
NFL
he in the
pass.
CFL or something? Or where,
yeah.
Where,
he was in the CFL. He recovers the onside kick against Green Bay.
Yep.
And then
scores a touchdown right before half.
Really, it's possible if the Seahawks win that game, he's the MVP.
Yeah.
It's very possible he's the Super Bowl MVP, even though his production tailed off after that.
I'd forgotten about him.
That was the end of it, right?
Like, yeah.
I don't think he didn't make the team the next year. We didn't really hear from him again, but man, big receivers are fun.
Yeah, everybody loves them. And DK Metcalf, remember in the rookie OTAs, that pass that he caught where he looked like he jumped 4 feet in the air. And so, yeah, that's something that I think everybody wants. You know, he's a answer for red zone. To me, the answer in the red zone was Doug Baldwin because he's always open, but don't have him anymore. But, yeah, I think, you know, it's comforting to know that you're going to, and you always say this, Jim, you throw it up to that guy. A lot of times he's going to catch it because he's so much faster and bigger, but a lot of times you get PI also.
Yeah, it'll be fun to see how that works out this year. So you've been on record as saying it's going to be either Moore or Brown that gets cut this year. And so I would assume now that Brown didn't play the other night, which suggests that they're comfortable with what he can give you, and he's got a spot on the team, that David Moore will be the casualty.
I might be
You can't say it.
It's possible that I'm raw. I may have been premature in my proclamation there.
Yeah, David Moore, don't forget about him. You know, and then, you know, two players that I thought was really, I guess, cool but interesting is Puna Ford and Jerron Brown. Those two guys did not play the other night.
What did Jerron Brown do? Well, wait, I know your answer already. He had 5 TDs and 14 catches. So
they liked him.
Pretty good percentage, but I'm surprised by that it's like a lock that Jerron Brown's going to make this
But
team.
They only threw him the ball like 19 times, and he caught 14 of them. Every third catch was a touchdown, and then the film would reveal that. If you were to watch the film, you know, he's open, he's running great routes, he's blocking. And as Schottenheimer said, he did everything that they asked him last year. So watch him. Did you see that sideline route he caught today? Where, I mean, he just barely got his foot in. It was beautiful. I mean, he is a guy that can pretty much run every route there is. And also Russell loves him.
That reliability, that dependability. My answer to that of what did Jerron Brown do, he can do everything as a receiver. They've got guys that are deep threats, right? Tyler Lockett was one of the best in the league at that last year. David Moore, that's the thing he does best. DK Metcalf, with his size and speed, that's what you would pencil him in as. With no Doug Baldwin, you need guys underneath, and right now that's John Ursua, it's Gary Jennings. We'll see about Malik Turner, and Jerron Brown's a pro.
Mm-hmm.
Jerron Brown, for all the different things, this is his sixth year in the league, so I think some of that adds up, that he's a guy who they know they can count on to do more than just one thing. Here's how I see the receiver shaking out. I think that you have four guys who are certain to be on the team at receiver. I think that you have four guys that there's just not much of a doubt in my mind about whether or not they'll be there, and that's Tyler Lockett, Jerron Brown, DK Metcalf. Well, I guess three that you would say are locks, because then beyond that.
And were you going to say Moore, or who was your fourth?
Moore's probably the fourth on that list right now. I think Moore would be fourth in that group. But you've also
got five or six.
Six is a lot, because you have to factor in running backs. Are they going to keep three running backs and a fullback?
Yeah, if you have J.D. McKissic. Yeah, yep. And Belor, you're right.
You have it's usually 10 between your running backs / fullbacks and your receivers. So if you're going to keep four, if you're going to keep Belor as a fullback and then three running backs, then you're going to have six. You have three rookies. Of those, DK Metcalf's the one guy that's assured of making the team. Gary Jennings and John Ursa are there. Malik Turner, Jazz Ferguson, David Moore, they're all competing for spots. And those are all guys. And Keenan Reynolds, who's been around as well. So I think that you've got, between the locks of Lockett, as well as Metcalf and Brown, and then out of the three other guys that are competing, it's David Moore. I mean, you've got six, seven guys competing for the other three spots.
Yeah, that's really going to be tough for them to figure out. I like Ursua. I just think, again, you know, the fact that they went and they made a draft day trade to get him, I think he factors in. It'll be fun to see how he does against Minnesota and then the rest of the games. And then Jennings needs to do a little more than he's done to this point.
I wonder if they have an idea already, you know, of what they want to do. Because, I mean, as much as we see, it's just the tip of the iceberg. You know, they're looking at film and every route that he runs and, you know, each player runs. So I'm curious, but it seems like a lot of it is up for grabs right now.
It's Danny, Dave, and Moore coming up next. We're going to give you our statements, reactions, predictions based on week one in the preseason. That's right. Bold proclamations coming up next.
You're listening to Danny, Dave, and Moore.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
5 o'clock refresh brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, Washington's most refreshing beer. I think we saw the safety of the future for the Seahawks on Thursday night. I think it's Marquise Blair. I was encouraged by how much he played, more than any other defensive back. I was encouraged how he played. And even the penalty, which we haven't gotten a chance to talk about, even the penalty, I think, showed an adjustment that he's making in his game. I think that he really did try to take his head. I think he tried to change the way he hit guys.
That was just stupid, and not on his part. I just thought it was a stupid call. I don't even – there's no part of me that when I watched that thought – man, that was a cheap shot. There was really nothing about that.
Well,
and I know, Dave, that you're always watching for all this stuff. And I saw that and I thought, yeah, again, you know, it's one of those things where if I was a wide receivers coach, I'd just say, hey, if you get hit like that, just make sure you just drop like your sack of potatoes or something so you can draw the penalty. But that looked like a clean hit to me.
Even Russell said that was a ball that should not have been thrown. I mean, that's on the quarterback, first of all. You know, you never used to throw that. I mean, the receiver comes back and chews out the quarterback for that. It's called a hospital ball. And it just, there's no responsibility there. I mean, I know this is not the issue, but it's just so ridiculous. The other thing is, what do you want him to do? Go down low and hit him? That's what Vance Johnson did to me. And I wished he'd hit me in the head, but he went low and dislocated my knee. I would much rather get a headache. So it's just so backwards and weird, but the best thing to come out of that is incredible savvy for a rookie who is really thirsting for to blow somebody up, to show that, you know, he hasn't got a chance to practice much. And, you know, in a game time situation to make a big hit, I think that's really important. I think this is more important than the sacks, was who plays the free safety. because number one, I think it's important that Bradley McDougal plays strong safety because he's such a good cover guy inside and out, and then he's physical. But also, you need somebody to put sort of that intimidation factor back into the Legion of Boom. And, you know, Bradley McDougal's a big hitter. Remember in Oakland, it was him. Who else? They knocked out a couple of receivers in that game.
Yeah, and there was another one.
It might have been Tedrick. But there needs to be a hammer back there. And it looks like Marquise Blair can be that. But he's not just a hammer. I mean, the open field tackle was probably the most impressive thing he did.
In the third and one, little swing pass to the running back. He was in space. Both guys were standing still.
Incredibly difficult.
That's the kind of matchup tackle. When the offense gets. They're like, we like that. That's what we've designed this to produce.
You have to beat one guy, and you can beat him. So that, and it was a squared-up tackle, too. It wasn't just some shoestring type of thing.
Have they had Blair primarily at strong safety since he got to Seattle? Because I heard on the broadcast the other night that he started 8 games at free safety for Utah and 4 at strong safety. So, yeah. I see a guy who hits like that, and I go, oh, Cam Chancellor, and you're strong safety. You want that guy closer to the line of scrimmage, but then he might be just as well suited for the back end there at free safety, too.
Yeah, I think so, too. He's 6'1", 196 pounds. You know, so, I mean, he's just kind of a tweener. What was Earl, 5'10"?
Earl was small. Yeah. Earl was 5'10".
I think he was, he was listed at 5'10 or 11, but I think he was smaller than that. So, and I don't think it matters, but I just think Bradley McDougal. Also, we asked Bradley, I'm pretty sure he said he likes strong.
Yeah, he wants to play strong safety. Yeah.
All the things you guys are saying about the hit and the penalty, I totally agree. That sort of the placement of the ball. Here's the one thing that I think we saw, though, was we saw an adjustment that Marquise Blair has made. He was ejected from 2 college games last year. Yeah. And if he would have hit the receiver, Nick Walker, if he would have hit him just like we've always seen safeties hit guys coming down the middle, if he'd just blown the guy up, if he'd put his helmet underneath the guy's chin, or he hit him like that, we'd probably say the same things about he's trying to make a play, he's going for the ball, what's he supposed to do? The difference in the way he executed the hit, I think you did see an adjustment that he's making. I thought there was a recognition that he tried to hit the guy differently, and it's similar to what we saw Cam Chancellor do. Cam Chancellor's first year as a starter was 2011. He was a second-year player, and he was flagged 3 times that year, and he got 2 fines that were increasingly significant. I think one of the fines was up. If it wasn't in 6 figures, it was getting close. Like he got 2 big fines. And he changed the way he hit after that. I'm not sure if he was fined for an illegal hit over the middle again in his career. He changed the way he hit guys. And he hit him with his shoulder and he hit him lower. And Vernon Davis, the hit he put on Vernon Davis, it was flagged in the game, but he wasn't fined for that. And I think that we saw a little bit from Marquise Blair that he is making an adjustment in the way he hits guys, because the way he hit Walker, he's probably always going to get flagged for that hit just because of how the officials are coached to call that of when in doubt, throw it, and it looks bad. Like in all this, and we can debate whether that's right or wrong. But you can't, I think as a player in today's NFL, you can't refuse to accept the situation.
Right.
And I think it showed, and that's why I was encouraged, and I wondered, am I talking myself into the idea because I loved the hit and I really like Marquise Blair? Not the least of which because of the quote that the scout gave to Bob McGinn in Wisconsin that I'd draft him in the second round if he wasn't crazy. Like I was super excited by Marquise Blair and everything I saw. And I think the way he hit the guy was encouraging.
Yeah, that's for, and again, like the savvy for a rookie. I mean, look, it took Cam Chancellor a year or two to get there. So that hit, look, man. And Pete said, what you need to do is get your head on the other side. That would, you know, if he would have put, because he used his shoulder, but his head went across. But if that's the goal line or it's third and short, you have to get your head across. And also, it's probably better to hit him in the head. And so that's the part where I feel like you can't make that hawk tackle all the time, you know. And, you know, every once in a while, somebody's going to spin out of that. So it's got to be incredibly frustrating for those guys. I really feel sorry for them.
What did you guys think of the pass interference review? It was the penalty on the Seahawks DB, yeah. And Pete went nuts after it. I was encouraged by the fact that they didn't overturn it, because when you watch it in slow motion and on the replay, you kind of look at it and you're like, was that really pass interference?
Jamar Taylor?
Yeah.
I didn't see it at all.
It was at the top of the route, and I think they ruled that he held him.
Oh.
The reason that I liked it, because I don't want them to go onto the review and look at it as, okay, we're going to re-examine everything to see if anything happened there. I thought it was, well, unless we see clearly that we absolutely made a hash of it and goofed it up, we're not going to change the stuff that's called on the field.
Well, I'd rather see them get it right. So, I mean, what were there, 26 penalties?
Yeah.
I think we saw an
26
exaggeration.
26 accepted penalties.
Yeah, accepted.
It was brutal.
It was terrible. Yeah, it was bad football, but 206 says, you know there's not a Matrix out there. Yes, that's right, 206. This is not the Matrix. So, but anyway, I don't know. I want to see him get it right, I guess. But I think we're seeing an over-exaggeration of what we're going to see during that. I just don't know if that – aren't those kinds of hits exciting? Don't we love those?
I just go back to what are you supposed to do, especially when you're trying to knock the ball free from the receiver. I know the ball was not in the receiver's hands when he hit him, but you don't know that when you're getting ready to deliver the hit.
Yeah, and it's going to be like somebody's going to spin out of that tackle in the future because they're trying to be safe. And also, I just think you're taking a big, exciting play out of it, out of the way. So, hey, I've been hit like that before. It doesn't really hurt that much.
Can't feel good, though.
Well, I mean, you know, it's just...
Say that again. It doesn't hurt that much?
Not that much. It's like if it's really clean, you know, like you can barely feel it. I mean, I got knocked on my butt I got blindside blocked one time on a screen, which I'm not sure. It might be a penalty now.
Probably is if you didn't see the guy. If he was going parallel to the line of scrimmage or back toward where the play came from. Yeah, it's illegal.
It was a screen set up behind the line of scrimmage, and I went running out there like an idiot and I'm going to make a tackle. Boom! You know, side of my head. Probably would have had lowering the helmet and all that stuff, too. It's terrible. I just think that.
Were you defenseless on the play?
I was never defenseless, Danny.
Never? Okay?
Never.
You
never
didn't even see him coming.
Defenseless.
Don't you wish somebody would have protected you?
Whose fault is that? Mine. Should have had my head on a swivel. I should have diagnosed the play. So, yeah, they're just, like I said before, I said out at the VMAC, I think it's bad for society that we are ruling in favor of dummies. Like, we're trying to protect dummies. And it's like, all of a sudden, the dummies are going to start to reproduce. And then they're going to have this clueless bunch of people. That they're going to have clueless kids that don't have any survival instincts.
So
they just wait for either an official or the government or somebody to pass a rule so they don't get hurt. The whole thing is just, it just drives me nuts. But mostly, you know what it is? Mostly it's like, don't people love this? Text it in to 710-710. Coors Light text line. Don't you like the big blindside hits? Isn't part of football the big hits? And now it's almost like if you get a big hit like that, it's like shame on you.
Yes.
Almost like you're surprised if you don't see a flag with a big hit now.
Yeah. I mean, is there any acceptable big hit that is not going to be are they trying to take that out?
We're going to take that into consideration and continue debating the reasons for the downfall of Western society next on Danny David Moore.
This is Danny, Dave, and Moore.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
All right. We got two more tickets. Two more tickets to the August 23rd Mariners game. They're hosting Toronto, the annual Canadian invasion. We're going to hold our ground in that game. You can come by early. We're going to be at T-Mobile Park, so you can stop by our live broadcast at Edgar's Cantina between 3 and 6. Tickets and our broadcast brought to you by Greg's Japanese Auto. We're going to have another...
We got to give Bobby another chance.
We're going to give another trivia contest. It'll be a very low bar. First guy to get the answer right is going to win the tickets, 206-421-3776. So let's load up the phone lines there. We've legislated the good old-fashioned sock in the nose out of society. Not just out of sports, but out of society. And there's a trade-off for that. I mean, it's beneficial, you could argue, to make our society less violent and all those things. But it allows people to say ridiculous things that in a previous time would have warranted a sock in the nose. And when the complaint came, like, hey, this guy punched me,
Everybody went, well, you kind of asked for it by saying that. But now we're a more civilized country. But the trade-offs of when you eliminate the punishment for certain things, when you eliminate the threat of punishment for certain things, there's a different result. Like, and Dave, I think that's the point you're making about there's no longer a punishment for a quarterback who throws a high arcing pass down the middle of the field, which in a previous era would have given the safety time to line up the guy who's going to catch it, time the impact for the exact moment that the ball touches his hands, and do his best, everything within his power, to obliterate that without regard for where his helmet hit on the player, or in fact, maybe trying to place it at the player's head because that's the spot most likely to render him incapable of completing the catch. We've now eliminated that. That can tend to be a good result for the offense, because if you hit a guy like Marquise Blair did, even if it technically you can argue is legal, it's likely going to draw a flag.
Yeah, remember the Minneapolis Miracle? I thought that was a byproduct of a kid not wanting to get fined.
No, you're right on that.
Was it Vaccaro? Maybe. No, it was a younger guy.
He's right at the sideline. He didn't want to get a flag on the last play of the game.
At the very end of the game, they clearly were going to win that game. And so I thought that that was a byproduct of that. And that's the thing for players. You know, I was thinking about this today, is that what you're asking a player to do all of a sudden at the last second is to not go as fast as he possibly can. Because that's what you're doing. You're running to the ball. And like Danny Trevathan hit last year, and everybody's like, oh, he's just cleaning up the pile. I'm like, no. He was hauling buns to get there. He was trying to get there as fast.
I think the pauses are more fun than the actual words.
The pauses are the best. I can't say certain words. I get frustrated.
It's the best.
Yeah.
And you kind of wonder, there's a little bit of suspense of like, is he going to do it? Is he going to censor himself?
How do you come up with buns there?
I have no idea. My mom used to use that term, haul buns. Yeah, so, I mean, that's what he was doing. He was getting there as fast as he possibly could, because that's what everybody's supposed to do. So now you're supposed to get there as fast as you possibly can, and then all of a sudden stop. And slow up. And I just can't wait until we see maybe a safety just turn down the hit and just go, well, he scored a touchdown, but I'm not going to get a $25,000 fine.
That's the other part of it. I mean, is Marquise Blair, is he going to get fined for that hit that he had the other night?
I hope not. And then I was so outraged when they had to take the time to see if they were going to eject him.
That is
awful.
And the ejections are awful, especially for the college kids. There's a linebacker in Colorado, Landsman. Mm-hmm. This kid has been ejected twice, and they are ridiculous penalties. He's just playing football.
Blair got booted twice last year, and the one that he got booted against the University of Washington was awful. It was a terrible. He was making a play. It was in the box.
Yeah.
He set his foot as Miles Gaskin made a cut, and he moved toward him, and he hit him in the head, but there's no. He was trying to make a tackle. He was trying to make a football play.
So, yeah, and then you have to miss. If it's the first half, you miss the second half. And then how does it work? I mean, you got to miss an entire game. If it's in the second half, you got to miss the first half of the next game.
Yeah, you end up getting punished. It's
And then in college, it just turns my stomach to see the security guards taking the guy off the field. It's so backwards and ridiculous. And I just, you know, at what point do fans just go, you know what, I've had enough of this sport? You know, and they sit there and worry about all the injuries and the headaches and the concussions and stuff. How about taking away some of the greatest things that are about what this sport is about? You know, the big hits. I mean, I got this great quote from Bertrand Berry, who works for radio down in Arizona. He said, I like the fact that it was dangerous when I played because not everybody can do it. You know, it takes some stones to go out there and know that you're going to be in harm's way. And it just now that there's these officials and all these rules that protect you from those kinds of things, or they punish those kinds of things, it's so ridiculous to me. I just think the NFL they're following the wrong path. That they should allow the big hits. You know, when the official came in, and again, love the officials, love the way that they're trying to enforce all these rules. One of the older officials there, I'm trying to remember his name, but he had played in the 70s, and he was kind of like me complaining about, you can't hit anybody anymore, and they don't practice anymore, and blah, blah, blah. But those guys are just trying to They're trying to enforce the rules that the NFL is passing down to them. That's not their fault. They're just doing what they're asked to do. But I just think at some point, but anyway, one of the officials goes, yeah, you know those blocks on the, like a punt return or something, where everybody goes, ooh. I'm like, they're not booing. They think it's awesome. They love that. They love seeing the big hits. That's what fires up a crowd and what fires up viewers. So I think they're making a big mistake taking that part out.
Two tickets for the August 23rd game. You just have to answer one question. We're going to go to Gene in Ravensdale. Gene, what's up? Oh, Gene. Gene wasn't ready. Called the shot and he hung up. Let's go to John in Renton. John?
Yo, yo, yo.
You're not going to hang up on me, are you?
I don't think so.
Marco Gonzalez, last year after a defeat to the Toronto Blue Jays, who will be facing the Mariners on the August 23rd, this game you're hoping to go to, he said very specifically what piece of furniture was desecrated. Do you know what piece of furniture it was by the Blue Jays that they desecrated that visit?
I got to go out on a limb and say a chair.
It was not a chair, John. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. We're going to go to Aaron in Olympia. Aaron, do you know what piece of furniture was desecrated?
Oh, my goodness. A treadmill. I don't know.
It was not a treadmill. It was definitely not a treadmill. Thank you very much, Aaron.
There's nothing you want less than somebody coming into your house and pooping on your treadmill.
Yeah.
You don't want that.
It flies off onto the wall.
Yeah, exactly.
We're going to see. Here we
go. Do or die here. Last caller.
We got one caller. Richard, do you know what piece of furniture?
Yeah, was it a coffee table?
That's close enough.
He said table.
Yeah, he said table.
He said table. All right, you hold on, Richard. You hold on. You're going to get those tickets. It was more specifically a dining room table. Here was Marco Gonzalez.
I take it personally when the team comes in here and brings their faithful fans with their muddy shoes and stomped on our carpet and took a dump on our dining room table. I take it personal.
Not on our table. Not this year. Not on our table. You know, hopefully Richard's going to be there and help us defend T-Mobile Park. We got the professor. John Clayton joins us next.
Wow, you sure know a lot of stuff.
It's great to learn,
because knowledge is power.
It is time to find out what we've learned, brought to you by Carter Volkswagen. Curtis!
Danny!
Ooh, did you see where Jessamine was today?
She's like whale watching,
yeah.
Isn't she?
She was on some exploration boat, and they had this awesome picture of a whale that came up and like slapped at the
off
water.
Off of Long Island?
Jess is basically like treating this thing like it's a pleasure cruise. Everybody else is working, and Jess is like out on the deck getting sun and drinking, martinis or whatever.
She's yelling at Jacques Cousteau. Jacques!
Why are you guys working so hard? Why don't you relax?
Can you give me an alert if there are any sea life worth watching? Curtis, what did we learn today?
Well, we started off today by learning that Dave spilled the beans once again.
It's going to be your chance. You get two tickets to the August 23rd Mariners game. They're hosting Toronto. We need to show up in mass to prevent the hosers from overrunning our fine ballpark.
Not on our table.
That's right. It's a Marco Gonzalez series.
Oh, you know what? You just ruined it, Dave.
You just gave away the answer again.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh.
See, Raj, were you here that day when I had like three that I gave away?
Yeah, you were on a roll that day.
Yeah,
Danny, you were gone, but Dave was in charge, and he kept giving away the answer to our giveaways before.
I didn't know he was going to ask the same question.
See, it's awesome.
I was like, no, you're off by five. It's not even close.
Yeah.
See, either way.
You've got a knack for it. It's part of the gag, right?
That's part of it, is screwing it up.
It is show business.
Yeah. There's no way Dave could have known what you're going to ask, though.
That's showbiz, baby.
Yeah, there's no way he could have known. Huh. Although, when we talk about the Blue Jays, I believe dining room table's the first thing that I think of. And it will always be the first thing that I think of, thanks to Marco Gonzalez.
The first thing I think of is how you and I had our biggest blow-up ever, was when the Blue Jays were in town.
I always think of the phrase, taking a dump. All of a sudden, you hear that in a post-game show. It's like, wow.
Yeah.
That's
on
different.
A dining room table. Angie's reaction was so funny. Angie Mantank. Because all I saw on Twitter was, the dining room table, ? Why the dining room table?
Yeah.
That was awesome. It's a very good
table,
question.
The kitchen table,
yeah, I'd never thought of it to be that specific.
What do you mean? That's where your family comes together and dines. They eat dinner together. That's like the most disrespectful place.
Yeah, it probably is the most. Although the worst place would be your bed, right? That would be the worst place.
Do you think it'll be a huge crowd again coming down? Because Toronto's not doing that well.
They're terrible.
This year.
Yes.
It'll still be...
I think it's a playground for them out down
I think
here.
We need less fully nude streakers this year. Because there was that one guy who was from Ireland that worked in Canada, came down here. He managed to get himself deported from two countries.
Did he really? He got the boot from Canada over?
He got the boot from Canada.
And then Ireland was like, we don't want him.
We also learned today that Bobby in Tacoma cannot be bothered with easy questions.
All right, here's the question. What number did Edgar Martinez wear?
Oh, my gosh, guys.
Come on.
I told you it was going to be easy. Bobby?
Wait a minute. Where'd Bobby go?
What do you guys think's funnier? That he just hang up out of panic? Or if he was like, oh, my gosh, this is so easy, and then accidentally hung up? That would be like one of those commercials like, when your mouth's full of peanut butter, like you know the answer, but you just can't get it out.
I think he just drew a blank and didn't want to come out with number 17 when it was actually 11 or something like that. I don't know.
Faced with embarrassment, he decided to punt.
I thought he was embarrassed.
It's more shameful to just quit, isn't it? Chandler Catanzaro style.
Well, at least you can guess a number. You can guess a number on that kind of
I still can't get over that. That kicker quit.
Catanzaro. Yeah.
Just quit.
What do you call him? Catnazoo?
Catnazoo.
Yeah, that was the pressure
just
was too much
quit.
For 2.3. He better have a lot of money in the bank. I don't think he does.
That's the thing. I mean, I get the idea of like, this is awful for me. And if you lost your job, no longer wanting to compete for it. But the idea that I don't even want to try anymore.
You still had three more preseason games where, okay, you missed two extra points, but you can probably, you know, get it back in the next few. And you might do enough that they'd keep you.
Maybe I'm overlooking.
And then when's it guaranteed that after the first game?
Yeah. Maybe I'm overlooking just how awful he must have felt about it. And he's just like, I can't take this pressure anymore.
I'm just seeing 2.3 and a $500,000 bonus.
You'd have to get security to come and tell me it's time to leave and go pack up my stuff and walk me out to my car to leave a job that was going to pay me $2.3 million.
Yeah. You'd be sleeping outside the gate.
Yeah. Seriously, like, yeah, until you tell me that there's absolutely no chance that I can get this money, I will keep trying to report to work in an effort to earn it.
Yeah, that's when I quit the NFL, when all 32 teams slammed the door in my face.
Said, no, thank you.
Speaking of well-paying jobs, we finally learned today with Jazz Ferguson that Jim is a supportive dad.
Are you good at Fortnite?
I feel like I'm okay.
You see that kid, 16 years old?
Yeah, $3 million.
Won $3 million playing Fortnite.
Right.
So now when my kids are playing, I'm kind of going, well.
Coach them up.
Yeah.
Yeah, get them better.
Go ahead, keep playing.
Jim's going to be their agent.
Hold on. Are you serious?
Yeah, I don't care. If they came home and said, hey, Dad, I made $3 million playing Fortnite, I'd be okay.
I think this is really bad for society. $3 million reward for a kid sitting on his tail playing a video game.
Right.
It's crazy. Good. Dave, the second and third place kids, they got, I think second got $1 million+. The third place kid got $900,000 or something.
I think maybe I've been a little bit too worried about society lately.
Well,
with the flags.
I kind of agree with you. I mean, there's headlines like ESPN.com had a headline today about the kid that won the Fortnite tournament, then having something happen while he was streaming his video game online on Saturday, like the police got called to his house. I'm like, why is this a news story on ESPN.com? What? I mean, seriously. Why are we? This is not a sport. Not a sport.
You know.
Not a sport.
Esports.
People have been texting in about the Idiocracy movie. Like, you got to see that. Like, yeah, this is exactly how it's playing out. Everybody plays video games 24/7.
Yeah. Not a sport.
Not Bradley McDougal.
Yeah, that's right.
He goes for walks in the park.
That's right.
He does.
All right, that's going to do it for us today. We want to thank Jazz Ferguson for joining us. The Professor John Clayton, as always, Ryan Divish was with us. Curtis Rogers was our producer extraordinaire. Matt Nelson was on the board. We're going to talk to you Thursday on Danny, Dave, and More.